The holidays are not just a time to think about gifts for our families and all those parties. It's also a time for those who are fortunate to think about year-end giving. We're joined by estate planning attorney Crystal Bowman Carter and KPCW Development Director Sarah Irvin to talk about it. Good morning, Crystal. Good morning, Sarah. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having us. Good
Crystal,
morning.
Let's get into some of the changing tax considerations associated with charitable giving. First, what is the standard deduction and how does that affect the typical taxpayer's ability to receive a tax benefit for donations?
Okay. Good morning. Thanks for having me. The standard deduction is an amount set by law that it's a deduction, obviously, for your taxes. For single filers, it's $15,750. For married couples, it's $31,500. And it's amount that reduces your income tax exposure. It, in contrast to an itemized deduction, it's a way that the government decided would simplify filing for about 90% of filers.
So as a practical matter, that means that unless you have, you know, a larger amount of deductions than that standard number, you're not going to get a tax benefit from any kind of charitable donation. Is that basically right?
Right. Charitable deductions are not, you don't get to separately itemize charitable deductions if you take the standard deduction.
Okay. And I think that since that number's gone up in recent years, and I guess I've read that that's had some effect on the number of people making charitable deductions. Okay, so if I am not going to go over that, and I guess as a practical matter, the only way you're going to go over that is if you have a big mortgage or, you know, some other way of getting to the point where you have enough deductions to get you over that $15,000, $17,000 threshold. So are there some other strategies that allow people to get some tax benefit from charitable deductions?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So if you make significant charitable deductions, you might decide to itemize instead. So if you're a single filer and you make charitable deductions in excess of $15,000 combined with your other below-the-line deductions, then you'll want to itemize. If you can't get to that level in a given year, you might consider doing something called bunching, which is a tax strategy where a taxpayer concentrates several years' worth of deductible expenses, usually primarily charitable contributions, into a single tax year. That allows them to exceed the standard deduction threshold in the specific year and itemize their deductions, maximizing their tax benefits in the off years. The taxpayer takes the standard deduction. So in other words, you can strategically alternate between taking the standard deduction in a given year and bunching all those charitable deductions you have into 1 year to take an itemized deduction and get a bigger bang for your buck.
So you go 1 year on, 1 year off,
or
1 year
off, or whatever. Yeah.
So you can hop around.
1 year on, a couple or a few years off.
Now I may not know what I want to do charitably next year. Okay, so if I bunch, then I've made the decision and it's done. Let's talk a little bit about how donor-advised funds provide another way to allow me to make further decisions down the road while still getting that advantage.
Yeah, if you haven't decided which charity to give your assets to, or if you want to let those assets grow tax-free, you might decide to put them in a donor-advised fund. A sponsoring organization holds the funds, they take care of the compliance issues, and you are the advisor to that fund. The sponsoring organization ultimately has to approve who you give the money to, but generally speaking, they're going to approve who you decide to donate to within what the law allows. So public charities is who they have to go to. You can't use those funds to pay for your gala tickets or get swag.
But if it's a donor-advised fund, are you not the donor and the advised? You know, you make, so you are the they.
Yes, the sponsoring organization is the fund, you are the donor, and you are the advisor. And if you die, you can name a successor advisor.
Oh, good. So you already have the money in there, and then someone else takes over.
Right. There's no requirement that it has to be given away within a certain amount of time. So those funds can sit there for a long time. And so you want to plan ahead and name a successor advisor as well.
And I suppose that's part of estate planning as well, isn't it, Crystal?
I tend to emphasize the estate planning side of things.
Well, I know that there are some changes coming to deductibility in 2026, and I don't know that might affect whether people decide to make a donation this year or next year. Can you sort of explain what's going on there?
Right. There are a few changes that I wanted to point out. The first one is that for those in the 37% tax bracket, which is a pretty high threshold, if you're married filing jointly, you have to have an adjusted gross income of $751,600 before you're in the 37% income tax bracket. But itemized deductions, or the charitable deductions, rather, are limited to 35% benefit. So if you give charitable itemized charitable deductions in 2026, you're only going to get 35 cents on the dollar value instead of 37 cents on the dollar value if you're in that high tax bracket. The next one is that for itemizers, there's going to be a floor of 0.05% of your AGI. So if you're going to itemize that charitable deduction, you have to give at least, for example, $1,500. The first $1,500 of your charitable deductions will not be deductible if you are a $300,000 income earner.
Wow.
But there's an offset. And I think this is what you were interested in, Roger. To offset that charitable contribution floor, there's going to be an additional new charitable above-the-line deduction, in addition to the standardized deductions of $1,000 for single and head of household and $2,000 married filing jointly for cash contributions made directly to a qualifying charity.
And just in case listeners are letting all this go over their head, remember on our website, kpcw.org, click on shows, click on Mountain Money, listen to it again, take notes, and you'll get it all down.
What are you saying?
I'm just saying a lot of numbers, a lot of info.
Well,
we want people to listen again, and you know, it makes sense, just got to hear it.
When we're talking taxes, a lot of people's eyes glaze over, but this is like important stuff. And as you're thinking about wanting to be good and be helpful, there's just no reason not to analyze what you can do to make that most effective from a tax perspective. I want to talk about old people, as I am one of them. Older listeners who have IRAs are able to do something called a qualified charitable distribution. How do those work?
Okay. A qualified charitable distribution is a distribution that you can make directly from an IRA using your RMDs.
Or a 401k.
Or a 401k.
Or a SEP or a simple IRA.
Yeah, all that alphabet soup stuff. So a retirement account. You can make it directly from a retirement account to a qualified charity and not be taxed on that. So if it's not a Roth IRA, if it's a taxable retirement account, you can avoid the taxes you would otherwise be required to pay by giving it to charity directly from your retirement account.
And you can start doing that at the age, as I understand, at the age of 70 and a half. But that also plays into and has an interplay with what those things called RMDs, required minimum distributions, which kick in a little later. So as I understand it, can you use QCDs to take up all, some or part of your RMD? Boy, that's a lot of initials.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. You can use your RMDs, your required minimum distributions, to make a qualified charitable distribution. It used to be that 70 and a half was when you started making RMDs. That number has stuck. So you can start making qualified charitable distributions at age 70 and a half. But if you're not eligible for RMDs yet, or you don't take RMDs yet, the age is 73 in 2025, and it continues in 2026 to be 73.
Okay. With all those clues, Sarah, you want to talk a little bit about you know, why year end giving is important to us here at KPCW?
Absolutely. Thank you. And I'm laughing because all of that alphabet soup is truly just, it's a lot of letters to me that I will look up.
And that is why you need to have a good tax advisor to help you figure all this out. But we hope we give you some clues to go start with.
Exactly.
Anyway, exactly. I think we have four listeners who got all that.
Well, but you touched on a number of different ways that listeners can support KPCW. So, of course, we are a nonprofit organization with our charitable ID that allows your advisor to, if you're planning to do a donor-advised fund transfer to KPCW, we can absolutely accept that. And you can let your advisor know that you want to make your year-end gift to KPCW through your donor-advised fund. We also accept charitable distributions from your IRA. We also accept gifts of securities. You can donate stock or appreciated assets such as bonds or mutual funds to KPCW as well. And we have all of that information available to you on our website as well. I won't rattle off of all of our details, but you can get it right there on kpcw.org under ways to support. You can also do some creative things, donating vehicles, donating boats. That's an option. You hear that from our NPR partners at the national level. Well, we accept those items as well here, and we use a third party to manage that, but it is a great way. If you have an old car and you want to make the best of it, donate it in honor of KPCW. And then one of the things that we really want to start emphasizing more and more are starting a recurring monthly gift to KPCW. You know, we live in this sort of subscription society where you have a subscription to Netflix, you have a subscription to Spotify. You probably have subscriptions you don't even know that you have because you signed up for something and you are paying them monthly. How about making KPCW one of those monthly recurring recipients of your charitable giving? There's tax benefits for that, and it allows our station to plan accordingly. When we know what we expect to receive in terms of donations every month, it really helps us to budget for, you know, the next 6, 12, 18, 24 months, and that's vitally important for us.
Now, can listeners just go to our website mm-hmm. and then do that monthly as well?
Exactly. So when you go to kpcw.org and you click the donate button, you have the option to make a one-time gift or a recurring gift. And the donation page will do the math for you if you want to make it recurring. So that's a great way to just sort of start off the new year with knowing that you're supporting KPCW with that monthly support. But going back to year end, you know, last year, I ran some quick numbers. Last year, we raised about $108,000 during the month of December. And as our listeners know, this year we lost about 15% of our revenue in the form of our federal funding. So we're trying to make up for that loss still. And if we were to raise $125,000 in the month of December, we would have increased that year-end fundraising by 15%. So if you're planning to make a gift to KPCW and you can add an additional 15% to that, that really makes a huge difference for us. And we would love to count you among our year-end donors before December 31st.
Okay. Sarah Irvin, Crystal Bowman Carter, thanks for spending time with us this morning. You've been listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. Please subscribe to the Mountain Money podcast to stay on top of all the latest episodes of KPCW's Mountain Money.
If you have any ideas for Mountain Money, please shoot us an email at mountainmoney@kpcw.org.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoy the show, make sure you leave a review no matter how you listen. And we'd appreciate it if you clicked 5 stars.